Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Joining me today to break down all the market action is Yap Jun Rong, market strategist with IG. Good morning, Jun Rong. Great to have you with us. Jun Rong, markets are abuzz this morning with all sorts of AI stories, including talk of a possible partnership between Google and Apple. So Bloomberg is reporting that Apple may license the Gemini AI engine from Google and build it into its iPhones. First up, what do we know? What's the latest here?
Yeah, so I think, as you mentioned, Apple is currently in talks to, you know, build Google's Gemini AI engine into the iPhone. Hmm. But for now, details are not yet final. We also know that Apple has held talks with Microsoft-backed OpenAI as well, and has considered using its model, but eventually decided to sort of go ahead with Google's Gemini engine. Reports say that it's unlikely any deal will be announced until June. That is where Apple will hold its annual Worldwide Developers Conference. But for now, it's really much is still in the air. I think the two parties haven't really decided the terms or the branding of the AI agreement, or even finalized how it would be implemented. But nevertheless, I believe it is a very positive step. If a deal between, you know, Apple and Google is able to materialize, it will definitely, you know, further build upon both tech giants' partnership.
Okay, so shares of Google's parent company rallied on the news overnight. Alphabet was on track for its best gains for the year until some traders started taking profits. So the stock was up nearly 8% in intra-session trade before closing up 4.6%. Apple finished in the green as well. Up till now, Apple has seemed to lag behind when it comes to the latest AI developments. Siri, for example, is just not caught up with ChatGPT or Gemini. So, Jun Rong, if this partnership, if reports do come to fruition, this partnership between Alphabet and Apple, what do you think this could mean for the two companies? Is it a good move? What could it mean for their competitors as well?
Yeah, I think it will be a very positive step for both Google and Apple as well. I think the potential deal sort of serves as a validation for Google's generative AI positioning, because you have to understand that, you know, Apple also approached Microsoft-backed OpenAI, but eventually, you know, sort of decided to go with Google Gemini. So that sort of underpinned it as sort of a winner in the AI race from Apple's perspective. And as you mentioned, the underperformance in Apple share price may be partly attributed, you know, to the lack of developments around its AI capabilities, sort of losing the first mover advantage to Google and Microsoft. So with this partnership, they are able to sort of stay competitive in the AI race. We know that they are also trying to acquire, you know, some of the AI startup to sort of support its in-house generative AI development. So this recent move clearly, you know, minimized the gap between Apple and, you know, its competitors such as Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But of course, one of the concerns that I have, I mean, with this partnership is that whether it will trigger any, you know, anti-competitive concerns from the U.S. Department of Justice. I mean, you have to understand there was an earlier case regarding Google's and Apple's search engine. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, they are working together on this AI front. You know, there's definitely these concerns that, you know, policymakers may turn, you know, their eyes on this partnership as well.
So market watchers, I think, are going to keep a close eye on what you just mentioned to see if regulators move to block an Alphabet-Apple tie-up. Collaboration between the two has provoked antitrust lawsuits before, you're right, particularly if it appears that the deal could help Google entrench its dominance in the online search sector. I want to segue now from Apple and Alphabet to another AI story, and this one is part of, drumroll please, the Elon Musk files. Musk has released a raw computer code behind X's AI chatbot, which is known as Grok. What do we make of this? What impact could this have on other AI companies like Google, OpenAI, which is the company behind ChatGPT?
Yeah, so Elon Musk has always been this, you know, he has always criticized that, you know, code should be open source, that, you know, each company should, you know, share their codes in order to develop the industry. So we are clearly seeing him holding true to his words. You know, he has sort of released the X chatbot, as you mentioned, Grok. I believe that open up opening up the resources may help to grow the AI space at a faster pace. I mean, it provides easy availability of resources, potentially pushing for more adoption, and also open up competition. Of course, you know, there has always been this argument that the dominance has always been held by tech giants like Google and Microsoft, which is a close partner of OpenAI. And with this move, you know, it really helps to sort of open up competition a little bit. I wouldn't say a lot, because generally open source code may be slightly inferior to in-house one, but nevertheless, it sort of promotes this wider adoption and help to grow the industry.
Junrong, given that there's pretty tense competition right now between the US and China when it comes to high-tech issues, I wonder if some might see Musk's disclosure of Grok's underlying code as a potential national security breach. Do you think companies in China, for that matter, and other parts of the world as well, also stand to benefit from Musk's move?
Yes, so I think opening that code to, you know, everyone, it does really fast-track the process of internal AI development. So, you know, there is this definitely this possibility that China companies may sort of gain access to that code as well. And, you know, they are able to take it off-shelf, develop it, and use it for their own benefits. The concerns, as you mentioned, would definitely come in terms of the geopolitical tensions. There has always been this tech. Of this tech disagreement between US and China. And with this latest X chatbot, it really does open up extra access to Twitter's data as a way of differentiating it from the rest. So whether the US government will be comfortable with this, that we will definitely have to keep a lookout for.
Grok is designed, by the way, to give snarky replies. That seems quite fitting for X. It is said to be modeled after the science fiction novel The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's accessible to X's premium subscribers. Musk, meanwhile, has had a falling out with OpenAI just last month. He's suing the company for breach of contract for allegedly abandoning its original mission. OpenAI has ridiculed the lawsuit, saying it's, quote, incoherent. All right, one more Elon Musk story before we move on. In an interview streamed on YouTube overnight, Musk addressed his use of a drug called ketamine, which is prescribed for depression, also pain. Musk says he takes ketamine periodically to treat, quote, chemical tides that lead to depression-like symptoms. And he added that investors shouldn't mind because his companies have been successful. From an investor standpoint, Musk said if there's something that he's taking, he should keep taking it. As an analyst, Junrong, as an investor as well, when you hear that, what do you think? Do you have any concerns or do you agree with Musk that he should keep doing whatever he's been doing?
Yeah, I mean, Elon Musk does have this quirky sort of character. I mean, you know, this is not the first time. I think previously there was a video where he was sort of taking, you know, sort of these drugs on a video. So I think he's arguing that he takes it so that, you know, helps to elevate the periods of low mood, and that is in the best interest of investors, where he, you know, he runs Tesla and other companies. But personally, I believe it feels more like a personal life kind of thing. So far, there has not been any indication, you know, that his drug use will impact the business negatively. And I believe that eventually, you know, investors will still look beyond it and will just focus on the growth numbers.
One more blip in the headlines, Elon Musk headlines. All right, shares of Tesla finish up more than 6% overnight. They are still down 30%, though, since the beginning of the year. Let's zoom out. Let's take a look at broader U.S. markets. U.S. equities started the week off on a positive note overnight. NASDAQ rose 0.8%. The S&P 500 finished up 0.2%. The Dow finished higher as well. It's a busy week for central banks around the world, starting with Japan, where investors are anxiously awaiting a decision today from the Bank of Japan. We're all waiting to see if the BOJ will raise interest rates for the first time since 2007. Junrong, give our listeners a quick sort of primer. Remind us why interest rates in Japan have been so low and why it might finally be time to raise them after nearly 17 years.
Yes, yeah, so if we were to look back to the 1980s, you know, there was this period of overstimulus, a low interest rate in Japan that really fueled a large-scale borrowing among many investors, where, you know, they used to buy assets in mainland Asia. So that really jacked up this real estate and stock market bubble. So eventually, it reached an unsustainable point. I mean, after that, government tightened its monetary policies and caused, you know, this real estate and stock market bubbles to burst. and create this steep recession for decades. So over the past few decades, you know, Japan economy has experienced this slow growth and even stagnation, which really prompted the Japan government to reduce its interest rate even into a negative territory, just to encourage consumer borrowing, consumer spending and investment. And recently, you know, they have been looking for two conditions for an exit from this negative interest rate policy.
Mm-hmm.
One is inflation. One is wage growth. So both have actually start to pick up in recent months, potentially a rollover impact from the COVID-19. And this really creates a window of opportunity for Japan to get out of its negative interest rate policy. I mean, the logic is that as inflation and wage growth is able to sustain, it will create this kind of a positive feedback loop where, you know, firms can earn more by increasing prices, which translate to higher wage and income for the workers, which then translate to higher consumption and demand, and sort of spur this chain of economic growth and really provide, you know, allow Japan this opportunity to really exit from its ultra accommodative stimulus policy.
Well said. An interest rate hike in Japan would put it at odds with the U.S., where rates have presumably peaked. We'll hear from the U.S. Federal Reserve this week as well. And investors are going to be looking for indications about when the Fed could start cutting rates. Billion-dollar question. Junrong, with the U.S. and Japan moving in opposite directions, what do you think this could mean for the Japanese yen and also Japanese equities?
Yes, so I think the policy divergence has been one of the very key factors that has been driving the dollar-yen relationship to its previous all-time high. But now, you know, as policy are set to converge between the U.S. and Japan, things could be set to unwind. You know, if Japan were to make a move today, it will definitely lay the groundwork for further policy normalization to come in future meetings. And that could really be seen as a continued step into the hawkish direction. So that will definitely be good for the Japanese yen, where the currency is finally able to get some sort of a yield. That will be well cheered by investors. But on the other hand, you know, if Japan were to sort of make a move, it may be bad for Japanese equities in the near term, because generally when we talk about higher rates, you know, what it means is that there are higher costs of borrowing for the corporates, which weigh on margin. But overall, I believe that, you know, that does not necessarily mean that equities will remain under pressure forever. I think, you know, any downside reaction in Japanese equities could be temporary. I believe that, you know, as inflation and wage conditions continue to turn around, that will translate to more profits for corporates, which may, you know, sort of help to offset the increase in borrowing costs as well.
Japanese yen trading just shy of 150 to the US dollar. All right, it's time for corporate news. Yep, Junrong is my guest today. He's market strategist with IG. Let's look at NVIDIA. Would you give it an up or down thumbs-wise today, Junrong?
Yeah, I can't really give a down for NVIDIA, right? I mean, with the previous overnight announcement, they have shown that they're clearly the dominant seller of AI chips. You know,
yeah,
they have 80% market share last year, and their new products really help to sort of anchor their leadership position and help to really fend off, you know, competition from the likes of Intel and AMD. So I think their growth prospects should bode well.
Yeah, shares of NVIDIA opened sharply higher overnight amid investor enthusiasm over a long-awaited next-generation chip. Now, it's called Blackwell, and NVIDIA launched the chip at its developer conference overnight. That is an up. NVIDIA shares approached $925 a share, but the enthusiasm either quickly waned or profit-taking kicked in. NVIDIA still finished the session in positive territory, but not by much. It closed up 0.7% at $869 a share. All right, one more piece of NVIDIA news to highlight. It is tying up with Johnson & Johnson to develop new AI applications for surgery. I'll give that an up as well. All right, Junrong, we're moving on to Supermicro. What do you think?
Yeah, Supermicro, another AI play. You know, can't really stay down to this one as well. Generally, Supermicro has a very close relationship with NVIDIA.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have that competitive edge there where they are able to receive, you know, AI chips from the likes of NVIDIA and AMD earlier than its arrival, and help to create this, you know, they are able to maintain their leadership being this key supplier of servers that are essential for generative AI apps. So I think the growth prospect is still there. You know, can't really say that their growth is peaking. So I will still give them an up.
All right, then. Let's take a closer look at Supermicro. They joined the S&P 500 overnight, which should be an up, but the stock has been on such a run of late that investors quickly took profits. Supermicro's share price has tripled over the past 3 months. It is up an astounding 900% over the past year. On its first day among the blue chips of the S&P 500, though, Supermicro shares fell 6%. All right, what is your view on the NASDAQ?
Yes, so overall NASDAQ, I think the trend remains our bias. But generally, if we look at other factors such as risk sentiments and market breadth, to me, it does really suggest that we need to see somewhat of a near-term retracement in order for the risk rally to sustain over the longer run. Mm-hmm. So I believe that, you know, I'm leaning slightly towards a near-term down. Mm-hmm. I think we have the upcoming Fed meeting. And looking at all those series of inflation data coming over the past 2 months, there's a chance that we may see somewhat of a hawkish revision in the Fed's dot plot. So that is the concern that I'm currently have. So, you know, I'm slightly leaning towards a sort of a near term down.
Yeah, I join you with that. For more than 2 hours overnight, investors had trouble placing buy and sell orders because of a technical glitch. Investors certainly cannot be happy about that with the NASDAQ. Now, while the issue has reportedly been resolved, it's still a down for NASDAQ for me. It's also the latest example of a high-profile company that seems to be experiencing technical difficulties. Just yesterday, we talked on this show about how McDonald's suffered an outage across Asia-Pacific and Europe. Right, listener? All right, let's look at UBS now. Up or down, Junrong?
For UBS, I will give it an up. I think just based on the technicals, prices has been on these higher high and higher lows. So prices are clearly on an upward trend. And I believe the fourth takeover of its former rival Credit Suisse has started to show this positive impact on its growth expansion. I think having this inorganic growth that sort of allowed them to realize a few years' worth of a growth prospect with a single takeover, you know, that definitely bought well for its business, and we are starting to see it show in terms of its growth rate. And I believe that, you know, their clients' fund managed by its wealth unit has also jumped, you know, sort of by about one fifth with that acquisition. So overall, I believe that, you know, with this large scale, they are able to sort of continue to see an upward trend in prices.
All right, it's been a year now since UBS took over Credit Suisse. Now, that deal may have been hastily arranged by Swiss authorities to prevent Credit Suisse's collapse, but it has been lucrative for UBS. The bank now has a market cap of more than $100 billion US dollars. That's its highest level in almost 16 years. Okie dokie, let's turn over and look at the picture for oil. Up or down, Junrong?
Yeah, oil prices will be another up for me. I think recently we are seeing sort of a surprise decline in terms of U.S. crude inventories for the first time in months. That, you know, sort of helped to uplift sentiments by providing a more upbeat take on oil demand. One thing I'm looking at is the ratio for the Bloomberg Commodity Index to the S&P 500. I mean, if you were to look at the chart, it seems to be sort of showing somewhat of a turnaround. So I think commodity prices could be something that we can look at over the coming weeks. And in terms of the technical front, oil prices has also recently broken out of its range. Right. We have seen Brent crude prices breaking above the $84 level. Mm-mm. So I believe that with this break, you know, we could potentially leave the $90 level on watch next.
That's a good way to put it. Joining me today was Yap Jun Rong, market strategist with IG.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.